Today on The Grave Talks, Ghost Box, Origin Story, a conversation with Bruce Halliday. Before there was widespread ghost hunting, there was Bruce Halliday, a little boy who witnessed the spirit of a deceased family friend wandering the halls of his family's apartment building in Brooklyn, New York. This single experience would later inspire Bruce to question and dig deeper into the concept of being able to not only see the dead, but to communicate with them as well. Several decades of research later, Bruce has been one of the key players in developing and perfecting the practice of what is today known as the ghost box. How did he get there? And what power does the ghost box hold? That's what we discussed today on The Grave Talks.
Well, actually, I had an incident that happened to me when I was a kid. And I come from a very old-fashioned Italian family. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Brooklyn. And my grandmother and grandfather owned a six-family apartment building. And it was all family, you know, each apartment was either uncles or cousins, you know, whatever. And I must have been about maybe 8 or 9 years old. And the kids used to play in the hallways. You know, it was three floors, three stories. And we used to, you know, play in the hallways. We used to run up and down the stairs. And you know what kids do.
Yeah.
So I was on the bottom floor one day in the hallway. And I was about to go upstairs to my grandmother's apartment, which was on the second floor. And I started to go up the stairs. And when I looked up, there was a real old gentleman standing at the top of the stairs. And he just stood there and he looked at me. I didn't recognize him. But, you know, we always had, like, you know, my uncles, my grandfather, you know, neighbors were always coming and going. And, you know how it is. So, yeah, I paid no attention to it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got to the top of the stairs, and I passed, like, it wasn't like where I was a little kid, so I didn't have to, like, excuse me and squeeze around this gentleman or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I basically just ran up the stairs, halfway paying attention, and just ran by him. And I heard, when I passed him, I heard him say, "Mr. Giuseppe." Mm-hmm. Right. So I go into my grandmother's apartment, and my grandmother always had like something cooking or something on the table or whatever. And, you know, I ran over and I started, you know, I guess picking on whatever was around and, you know, just being a kid. And I had said to my grandmother, I said, you know, the man that was in the hallway, was he here to see Grandpa? So she said, you know, she spoke broken English, my grandma. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, you know, she says, I don't know what man. So I said, there was a man in the hallway. So she went outside. She called my uncle upstairs. My uncle came down. He looked around the whole house, around the whole hallway, you know. And he said, no, there's nobody around, you know. So she said to me, well, you know, well, who did you know him? I said, no. So she says, what did he look like? So I explained, you know, I described him to her. And she said, well, did you talk to him? I said, no, but when I was going by him, he said, Mr. Giuseppe. And her face just dropped, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I didn't pursue it after that. I mean, you know, as being a kid, it just went in, you know, in one part of my brain and out the other.
Sure.
But years later, I had asked, my grandma passed away, and the subject came up, I guess, at a dinner table or whatever, and I told the story at a dinner table. And my mother was there. And my mother said, you know, you were a kid at the time. We didn't want to scare you. She said, but when your grandmother mentioned it to me, you know, told me about it, she said that the person you described and the individual's name was the gentleman that they bought the house, the building from, like 30 years before. And he had been dead for about 20 years. So that, you know, I kind of, at the time, I kind of brushed it off. I was maybe in my mid-20s, and, you know, I wasn't, you know, at that time, there was nothing, You know, no, we never knew anything about the paranormal. You knew what a ghost was, you knew what to get, but we never really got into that stuff. We weren't subject to it. We weren't around it. You know, there was no information out, no internet at that time. There was nothing out there, you know, that you could get. Nobody in Brooklyn was a paranormal investigator at that time, back in the early 80s, late 70s, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of brushed it off. And then later on in life, you know, and what happened was, close to 2000, like maybe 98, 99, around there, maybe 2000, you know, I had stumbled across the movie White Noise. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Sure.
Sure.
So I watched the movie, and I said, wow, I said, that's really cool. And at the end of the movie, somebody came on, like there was like a little excerpt at the end of the movie where somebody came on, and they told about how to do an EVP with a recorder, with a tape recorder. So at the time, there was no, you know, we just had the regular cassette recorders. We had no digital recorders or anything like that. So I happened to have a tape recorder. So what I did was, I said, I'm going to try this. I'm going to see if there's anything to this. And I took the tape recorder and I put it in my bedroom and I turned it on and I left the house. And I came back maybe about an hour and a half later, and I listened to the tape. And my bedroom door was constantly, I mean, I never closed it. It was like, yeah, I didn't have to close it. I was the only one in the apartment. Nobody was in there. I never had to close the bedroom. I don't think I ever closed it. But when I put the tape recorder on to cut down on any ambient noise or whatever, I had closed the door. Right? And on the tape, maybe 10 minutes into the recording, a voice, a low, wispy voice says, does he want this open? So when I heard that, I mean, I just froze.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I think I wanted to chuck the tape recorder out the window. That's how nervous I got, you know, and that hooked me. That's what got me started into, you know, starting to do, you know, some research into the paranormal and what it was all about and what EVP was all about. And you know, that's what got the ball rolling.
Lots to unpack there, and I want to get into how things evolved after that. But a few questions about what you just talked about. Yeah. What was your family's reaction to knowing that this apartment that everyone was in was haunted? When you were able to come back and revisit that conversation of you know, your family filling in, going, that guy died all those years ago. And yeah. And when you kind of started to get more into this and you started talking to them about that experience, did others have stories too that you were unaware of seeing individuals in this building that or experiences that were unexplained?
Well, after I had brought it up, I mean, it was pretty much at the time brushed off. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with old school Italians. They're very superstitious, but you're not supposed to talk about it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I mean, I had a couple of uncles that, you know, we would be sitting around, you know, having a glass of wine or whatever, and you know, something would come up, would be telling stories or whatever the case may be, however it came up. And you know, I had a couple of uncles that said, you know, that they saw some things and or heard some things, you know, either in the basement or you know, in the upper floors of the building and stuff like that. But they just, you know, never thought anything about it. They thought it was kind of weird, but just didn't pay really any attention to it because, like I said, that wasn't a mindset at that time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was pretty much, and if I brought it up, you know, it was pretty much, you know, said, you know, yo, don't be crazy. There's no such thing as ghosts. What are you talking about? And, you know, and that's it. That's how it was treated, you know, at the time in my family and friend circle at that time.
Sure.
Because like I said, nobody was privy to any paranormal information at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, we never got any paranormal information. I mean, you know, there was nothing out there, nobody out there doing it at the time. There was no, you know, no television shows like Ghost Hunters or anything. Yeah. And nobody had any clue about anything. So when you brought it up, you know, in Italian, they would say, like, he's some bots. You know, this guy's a little nutty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of shied away from, you know, expressing, you know, my thoughts and feelings at the time to, you know, to the people around me because they didn't receive it, you know, in an open-minded way.
Sure. I mean, and if it's something that you don't really have an answer to, I mean, how do you answer that either? You know, I mean, it's easier, especially if it's a child, just to be like, no, it's nothing, you know, and if it's not ongoing just every now and then, you know, okay, let's pass this on.
Yeah, it's your imagination, you know, like that.
So when you had the experience, you had the tape recorder, and you hear, does he want this closed? I know you told me your reaction there to that, but what else did you begin to try and figure out, how can I talk to this more? Did you try and figure out like who is it? Where did you go?
That opened the floodgates right there. That, you know, after I got over the initial shock and you know, gathered my intestinal fortitude to go back and try it again. I mean, it got to the point where I was doing EVP recordings like, you know, I mean, 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. Mm-hmm. Individual recordings, you know, in different places. I found myself taking the tape recorder, like, you know, now I would go out, and I knew nothing about paranormal investigation. I didn't even know there was such a thing. But I found myself taking the tape recorder with me and going to, like, cemeteries and, you know, going to places like old buildings in the neighborhood that were, like, you know, 100-year-old buildings, and, you know, sitting in the car outside the building and doing an EVP session. And, you know, I mean, I got some interesting stuff, but it really didn't get going until later on, like till I had moved out of, I got married, I moved out of Brooklyn, and I moved to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And once I got to New Jersey, I had a finished basement in my home in New Jersey, and I made one room in the finished basement, like it was like a research room. Mm-hmm. It was just for my EVP and for any paranormal stuff that I was doing. So I really started to seriously get into it at that point.
When it comes to gathering an EVP, are the odds going to be in your favor if it's an older building or a cemetery or something that you would consider to be more likely to have more energy or more activity that had taken place there at one time versus, you know, a brand new tract home on a new subdivision?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. That's the frame of mind that we have. I mean, normally, you know, the train of thought that mm-hmm. that we follow is that the older the building, the more circumstances and more incidents and more energy the building has absorbed, mm-hmm. Would lead it to have more activity than, say, a new house that was just built.
Yeah.
There are two different types of of activity that you can pick up. You can pick up direct activity that can come from an entity that is either grounded in visitation or stuck at that location, or it can be come from residual spiritual energy that the actual building itself has absorbed, mm-hmm. and just continues to play over and over again, and that manifests itself in energy that can be picked up as an EVP. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, a lot of different scenarios you can come across, but I believe that you have more of a chance to get something at a seasoned location.
Sure.
As opposed to a brand new location.
Yeah.
But it's possible anywhere. I mean, I did an experiment at one point where I took a digital recorder. I put it in a coffee can. I put the lid on the coffee can. I duct taped the whole coffee can, and I buried it 2 feet underground, and okay. left the recorder running.
Yeah.
For as long, I left it overnight, and it ran until the battery ran out, and I got, you know, I got quite a few EVPs.
Really?
In that recorder.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. What did you pick up? Was it audible enough to make out what the words were on that one?
In traditional EVP, I'm sure that you know, there's classes of traditional EVP. Yeah. You have everything from a Class A EVP down to a Class D EVP, and they vary in audibility. So, I mean, on that recording, I mean, all you would believe that you would get was, you know, static noise, white noise, you know. But I didn't get any Class A EVPs. I wouldn't even say I got Class B EVPs. They were all, but you could tell that there was something there, that there was an attempt being made. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they were all like Class C, Class C plus EVPs. I mean, you would have really had to edit the crap out of them and use all kinds of editing filters and stuff to try to, you know, draw out, you know, what was being said. And then once you do that, once you use audio filters on a piece of audio evidence, you're changing the whole dynamic of the audio. So it contaminates it immediately. So you can never trust what you're getting if you use audio filters on an audio recording that's, you know, being presented as any kind of paranormal evidence.
Sure. EVPs, obviously, that's where you have your tape recorder, your rolling tape and or a digital tape. And it's just you're getting the air. You're hearing what is audible or picking up sometimes what we are not hearing, but it's showing up on the tape or the digital recording. Let's move into the areas as you advanced further in this journey and this curiosity. How did that progress into getting into the world of the spirit box and finding other ways of trying to pick up on audio and trying to learn how to communicate and find ways of hearing from the other side for you?
Okay, so now, like I had mentioned, I moved to New Jersey. I set up a little laboratory, little research room in my basement. And now I started to really seriously want to do research, you know, and really try to find out what was going on, who we were speaking to, you know, who was communicating with us, where it was coming from, how we were obtaining it, you know. And I started to do, like the coffee can thing. I started to do a lot of different experimentation. I had purchased a Tesla coil. The premise behind traditional EVP is an entity is capable of using ambient EMF energy to place the message onto the recording medium, whether it be tape or digital recorder or video or whatever the case may be. The EMF that they manipulate, I'm at a loss for a word here, but what it does is it melds with the magnetic structure of the recording device.
Sure.
And they're able to manipulate that EMF energy into words and phrases.
Okay.
So what I wanted to do at the time was I wanted to experiment with, say, flooding the area that I was doing the EVP session in with EMF energy. I mean, really flooding it. So what I did was I got a Tesla coil. There's another device. I forget the name of it right now. It's a little globe, and you turn it on, and if you touch it, your hair stands on end.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? Yep. I can't think of the name of it offhand, but I got one of those. And I mean, I really did, you know, I mean, I flooded a small 6x6 area with as much EMF. I mean, when I turned the EMF detector on, I mean, you could actually physically feel the EMF energy in the atmosphere. You know, if you walked into the room, that's how much of it there was. I did it with that. I did it with eliminating the coffee can premise was to eliminate any EMF energy at all that could reach the recorder and to see if you would still be able to get EVPs in that respect. And, you know, when I did get the EVPs from the coffee can recording, it kind of put a dent in the theory that we believed that an entity needed EMF energy to place an EVP.
Sure.
To a recording device. So, you know, it's, you know what baffles me in this whole world of paranormal and EVP? I mean, no matter what you get, no matter what evidence you gather, no matter what you try to do, you never get a definitive answer. I mean, there's always something that'll upset the apple cart, you know?
Sure.
After the EVP, I mean, I did EVP, traditional EVP, for a few years, you know, stringently, just concentrating on EVP, traditional EVP. And it's funny because I'll tell you a little story right after I get done with this. And I'm glad you said you like guys that are long-winded, because you'll get one or two words in this whole interview and I'll take care of the rest.
That works.
So I actually had moved on from there, not moved on, but incorporated video ITC into my arsenal of paranormal investigation. I used to do video feedback loop imaging. I did crystal imaging. I did water imaging. You know, I started to get into that, and I had some limited success with that. But it wasn't my, it didn't give me the jolt that the actual communication gave me, you mm-hmm. know? And around this time, let me tell you the story I had just mentioned. I was going to tell you a story. Let me tell you this story. And this prefaces the, you know, what I'm about to, the area I'm about to go into.
Okay.
I started to get traditional EVPs that were alluding to receiving a box of some sort, receiving a package of some sort. I even got EVPs that told me where the package would be. Like where it would be, like it would be, I would find it under a hedge, you know, outside under a hedge.
Yeah.
That it would be, you know, it would be a wooden box. And, you know, I was getting all messages like that. And it didn't mean anything to me at the time because I didn't know what a ghost box was. I didn't know what I didn't know anything about ghost box communication or the devices themselves. I had never heard of one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so the messages that I was getting had little relevance to me. I mean, I was just marking them down as, you know, entities will send messages that, you know, a lot of times are not relevant to the topic that you choose. If you're asking questions or, you know, the direct questions that you're asking, I mean, they have such a limited amount of time and opportunity to leave a message. I guess what's most important to them at that second is the message that they send.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I can ask a question that, you know, like, you know, can you tell me what year you died? And I'll get a clear response of, I love pepperoni pizza. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, it's not, it has no relevance to the question that I asked. And there's a way, you know, that we distinguish what's communication and what's not, you know, and you say, okay, it is communication, but what does that mean? I love pepperoni pizza. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, but I've come to the conclusion over so many years of experience that, you know, they will just blurt out whatever message they can, whatever's most important to them, or they feel that they need to get off their chest at that second in time, they have the opportunity to send that message, and they send it no matter what you're talking about. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the questions, you know, I don't count anything unless it's a relevant answer or a relevant statement to the question or the topic at hand. You know, when I do a session, a communication session with the ghost box, it's if I ask certain questions or I'll designate a certain topic at the outset of the session. And if it veers from that topic or there are no direct relevant answers or statements to the questions I ask, I mean, I'll keep the communication, but it's not relevant in you know, my research for that session.
When you're talking,
anyway, I'm getting all off track here.
When you're talking to someone using just gathering EVPs or using the ghost box, and I want to get into more detail about the ghost box for our audience. But a question before that, when you're asking questions out there and you're getting, you know, for example, you ask the age and you get, I love pepperoni pizza.
Right.
Do you ever wonder if maybe on their end, they're having difficulty understanding what you're asking them or what you're saying out loud, just in the same way that we have different classes of EVPs and the clarity at which we understand them? It makes me almost wonder if are they not hearing what you're saying and they're taking their best guess at deciphering what it is you've said and trying to answer a question. And then it's coming across back to you as, well, they're completely off topic and they're just saying, here's right. what they're saying. Could it be that, or could it be, you know, could it be just completely misunderstanding what is being asked of them? Almost, you know, like the mom on Charlie Brown or something.
Right.
Like that's what they're getting. Like, I think he asked about pizza.
I'll give you the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah.
The answer. All right. Because I could go into a 15-minute explanation of that.
Okay.
And you know, that alone. But the short version is, yes, they do hear us. They do have spiritual devices that they use. They hear us in two ways. They hear us by they collect our energy as we're communicating with them. The ghost box actually is a conduit that transfers spiritual energy from our side to theirs and vice versa. So they use a combination of things to decipher what we're saying. And this is what everything I'm telling you is gathered from thousands of ghost box sessions mm-hmm. over the last 20 years, you know, and the conclusions that we've come to at this point that lead me to, you know, what I'm telling you is the culmination of what we come to believe over all of these years of research.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm not just, it's not just coming off the top of my head.
I mean,
this is from in-depth, you know, two decades of in-depth research.
And that's why I want to ask these questions, because these are things that we wonder about if we're not, you know, we don't have that experience. You have the experience. I want to ask you, as being someone who has that experience, you know, debunk some of these ideas or theories or questions that we may have based right. on your experience, because you certainly have a heck of a lot more in this area than many. Now, yeah. let's just take a quick step back for our audience that's not super familiar with the ghost box. We obviously, EVP for the most part, I think this day in age, most of us understand, know what that is. Ghost box, explain to us what exactly is the ghost box? What does it do? How is it working?
Okay. An individual about 20 years ago named Frank Sumption, he created a device from a regular analog radio, and he made the device, he built the device in such a way that it would sweep the bands, AM and FM, whichever one you choose. It would sweep the bands back and forth in a continuous sweep, mm-hmm. a constant linear sweep around the dial. And he made it sweep fast enough so that it would break down the words of broadcast coming through into small fragments of sound mm-hmm. that were unintelligible if you listen to them. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Ghost boxes have an inherent kink that they do spit out words, full words of broadcast here and there. But today, the ghost boxes that we use today, which Frank Sumption didn't have on his boxes at the time, we have sweep speed adjustment knobs that allow us to adjust the speed of the sweep. We can make it faster or slower, or, you know, if we find that, you know, we're getting full-on words of radio broadcast, which you can tell, you know, the difference between radio broadcast and actual attempts or actual communication. And I mean, there's an explanation for that too, but it's a little lengthy also.
Sure.
But what we do is, you know, a ghost box will sweep the radio band. Let's say, you know, whether it's AM or FM, it'll sweep the radio band fast enough so that it breaks down all words of broadcast signal into small fragments. Mm-hmm. The premise behind communication through a ghost box is that an entity can use the fragments of sound and piece them together to form words that are then delivered through the speaker of the ghost box and allow us to hear those communications live in real time. That's the basic gist of what a ghost box does.
Is it breaking down like syllables of broadcast signal? Where is it getting the words from, I guess, is what where I always kind of go to with this.
The words of communication, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. What happens is, look at it this way, okay? Say you take 100 children's blocks. Remember mm-hmm. the kids' blocks with the letters on them?
Yeah.
Okay. Say you take a bucket of kids' blocks and you shake this bucket up and then you dump it on the floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody in the room asks you, what's your name? You go and you pick out the blocks that you need and put them together in front of that person to spell out your name.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what the ghost box is doing. It's taking the words, like if you were to listen to a radio station, of course you're going to hear, you know, full audible, intelligible speech coming through a radio broadcast.
Sure.
The box. Now, if you were to take, like, we used to do, actually back in the day before ghost boxes were even available, you could do a live communication session by actually taking an analog dial radio and spinning the dial back and forth manually with your hand to break up the signal, mm-hmm. to break the broadcast signal, and you would receive communication that way. That was a very rudimentary way of doing it. But I'll tell you, you know, that the first time I ever did anything related to a ghost box or ghost box communication was a manual sweep. Mm-hmm. And I started the sweep. It's a whole story, but I don't know whether you want to know how I got into ghost box communication or what. But, you know, there's a whole story behind it. There's a whole thing behind it that leads into, you know, how I got started, yeah. how I found out about ghost boxes and everything.
I want to hear it. Let's hear your story of how you got into it.
How much time we have? How long is your show run?
We're about an hour long in length, so we got another about 30 minutes here. So let's hear how you got into it, and then I can ask some more technical questions to better understand and help our audience better understand how this is working.
You got the idea of how they're forming the communication, though, right?
I am, and I have some questions about it, but I want you to share your story first.
Okay. All right. So in the time that I'm doing the traditional EVPs and the video ITC and stuff like that, I had formed a small paranormal investigation group in Southern New Jersey, and we really weren't doing a lot of investigations because I was the type of guy that liked to be in the research room. You know what I mean? Like, I hated running around a location with a recorder and a flashlight and an EMF detector and then coming away with, like, you know, and having to go over hours and hours and hours of, you know, raw data to mm-hmm. try and sift out, you know, whatever little, you know, things we may have picked up. I wasn't into field investigation. It wasn't my thing. Mm-hmm. At the time, that's what everybody was getting into. So, you know, myself and a few colleagues, we formed a group and we did these small investigations here and there. So now I got contacted. I get an email one day from an individual, and in the email he says to me, "Have you ever heard of a ghost box?" So I write back, "No, I have no idea what you're talking about." So he writes me back a small explanation of what it is, and he had just heard of it from someone else. He knew that I was, I was prevalent in traditional EVP, so I guess he decided to find out if I knew anything about it, which I didn't. So I told him no, and he came back to me with the explanation, and I said, to me, that sounds like a bunch of nonsense. I don't understand how that's going to work. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that was the end of the conversation with him for a while. About 6 months later, I get another email from him. And he says, "Listen, if you want to learn about ghost boxes and what's going on," he said, "there's a guy, Frank Sumption, that created a ghost box, the ghost box, you know, the first ghost box, and he has a Yahoo group on Yahoo. Mm-hmm. If you go over there and join the Yahoo group and read the posts and stuff, you can find out what a ghost box is about. It's really fantastic. I think you should look into it. You being an EVP guy, I'm sure it would interest you." So now he's got my interest piqued. So I go over there, I go to the Yahoo group, I join Frank Sumption's Yahoo group, and I lay back, I don't participate, I just do my research, I'm reading everything, you know, and I'm seeing what these people are talking about and stuff, and you know, I say to myself, you know, I got to hear one of these, I have to hear one of these boxes, I have to hear what's coming out of this, you know, what it sounds like, and then I'll know whether I want to be involved in it or not.
Sure.
So I contacted, I'm sure you're familiar with Chris Moon.
Right. Sure.
I contacted Chris Moon, and he had sent me, he had told me that where he had a couple of, because he was the only one at this point, Chris Moon was the only individual in the world that was using a ghost box in the field. The only one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you got to remember now, at this time, Frank Sumption was the only person that was building ghost boxes. He had just introduced them. And Frank Sumption was a friend of mine, a personal friend of mine. I love the guy, but he was eccentric and he never sold his boxes. And the only way you would get a box from him is if the box told him to send it to you. Now, this is at that time.
Okay.
This is at the very beginning, right?
Yep.
When there was no such thing as ghost box communication. No such thing as ghost box research. It didn't exist. Mm-hmm. There was just one guy, Frank Sumption, building. He only had built a few of these boxes at the time. Chris Moon was a friend, and he contacted him, and he gave him one of his boxes, and Chris was out there, you know, starting to use it and recording the sessions that he was doing out in the field. So I was able to hear some of the recordings, and I said, okay, I'm hooked. Yeah. So now I contact this individual that was emailing me, and I said to him, you know, what do you want to do? You know, how do you want to be involved in this? So he says, well, you know, they're doing what they call manual sweep sessions, you know, where you just get a regular radio and you sweep the dial manually back and forth by hand. And, you know, that's how, because you weren't getting a Frank's box. You weren't getting a ghost box. And unless you knew how to build one, which nobody even knew what they were at the time, you were stuck. The only thing you had open to you was manual sweep on a regular radio. So we started to do that, and we started to record those sessions. And when I did my first one, I took the box and I took it up into my dining room because it didn't get any reception in my basement. Now you needed reception for the radio. So I take it up into my dining room, I put on my dining room table, and I turn it on, and I say, is there anybody there that wishes to communicate with me today? And I start to sweep this dial back and forth manually. And I mean, I was whipping this dial back and forth. Okay, and the first thing that came out of that radio was, "Hear Bruce." When I tell you, Tony, I dropped whatever I had. I left the box just the way it was, and I ran out the door, outside, into the front yard. Mm-hmm. That's how much it shocked me. And you got to remember, now, I was into the paranormal for quite a few years now.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And this shocked me so much that it would say my name and give me a relevant answer, like, "We're here, Bruce." And I mean, when I composed myself, I came back in, right? And I didn't record this. I didn't record the session because we had no idea what we were doing. It's the first time I ever tried anything, you know, in that aspect. So I ran to get my recorder. I turned the recorder on, and I did another session. Yeah, I did like a 10-minute session, asking questions back and forth. And I did hear... I didn't hear my name anymore, but I heard another name that continually came up, and the name was Mike, and it came up over and over again in that one session, mm-hmm. right? And I had it on recording, and when I listened back to the recording, what I heard, what I believed I heard in real time, I also heard in the recording, so that reinforced it. And it turned out that this individual entity, Mike, turned out to be I coined the phrase later on, spirit technician.
Okay.
These spirit technicians are individual spirits on the other side that work with the communication with us, but they're on their side, and they facilitate the communication between our world and theirs, and they oversee the session. Because the ghost box, we've come to the conclusion that a ghost box does open a portal. It does open a doorway for the exchange of energy. And that doorway opens up. Entities are capable of passing through that doorway. Mm-hmm. So the technician also acts as sort of a guard, you know. And if you ever listen to one of my sessions, you'll hear at the end of the session, at the end of the recording, I say, okay, actually I have two technicians, Mike and Lisa, a male and a female. And I ask them, Mike and Lisa, any entities that may have come through the box during the session, can you please have them go back? Let me know when it's clear to shut down. Because if you shut the box down and you close that doorway, and the entity that may have came through hasn't returned, they're going to be stuck here until you turn that box on again. And it's not a good thing. So, you know, there's a lot of protocols now that we follow that we had to learn the hard way in the beginning days, mm-hmm. you know, of how to do it, you know. So that was my first foray into ghost box communication. Then I became friends with Frank Sumption, and he had sent me a Frank's box. And that really started the real serious research.
That's going to wrap up the first part of our conversation with Bruce Halliday about the ghost box. In part two, what inspired Bruce to venture into the world, improving communication with spirits through the ghost box? Wouldn't the spirit energy need perfect timing from broadcast to piece together its messages based on what is coming from the broadcast signals at that time? Bruce will explain in great detail exactly how it works. How did the evolution of the ghost box take place? Can an individual request to speak to a specific spirit while using a ghost box? And is there ever a risk that a person you believe you're contacting through a ghost box is not that person at all? We'll discuss that and more in the second half of our conversation. To hear it, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of the program, an individual that helps keep this program on the air and alive. To become a gravekeeper, sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or follow the links at thegravetalks.com to become a gravekeeper. It's only $5 a month. You'll have access to all of this conversation and interview, along with access to hundreds of our interviews in their entirety. Hundreds of hours that you can binge away listening to our ghost stories and conversations about the other side. To do it, like I said, patreon.com/thegravetalks. You'll get advanced access to our episodes weeks before they're released to the public. Another perk of being a gravekeeper. $5 a month is all it is, or sign up for a full year annual membership and get yourself 1 month free. Patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.